Is the left a revival of the Gnostic heresy? Because that filthy Protestant fecker, Ed Dutton, has been arguing that the left is indeed a revival of the Gnostic heresy. And I don't think that's right, like, because I think that it's misleading. It's a misunderstanding of Gnosticism to categorize it alongside modern leftism. Modern leftism has no belief, like, in the transcendent and no belief in a spiritual universe. And in that way, the left is nothing like the Gnosticism that you found in the early church, like. So I think that Ed Dutton is wrong about that. And you shouldn't go around calling not the left, the modern day left, like, a revival of the Gnostic heresy. Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, I was trying to channel there my good friend, Mr. Keith Woods, who has done a very interesting video, sort of nuancing this idea that is very common. It's something I've talked about, and it's also something that commentators, even in sort of mainstream newspapers, have talked about, which is the idea that leftism is a revival of the Gnostic heresy in the early church. And Keith actually makes some quite good points, that it's kind of takes it too far. But I want to argue today that it is there is still something in this. There are still key ways in which Gnosticism crosses over with what you have in the modern day left, and also importantly in the modern day right. I want to argue that it's both the left and the right that should be understood as modern-day Gnostic heresies, in the sense of certain aspects of the far right and certain aspects of the far left. And I got thinking about this because a new paper has been published, and I put a link to it below, which tests the idea that people that are right-wing have a, Republicans specifically it talks about, have a kind of paranoid style and are more likely to believe in conspiracy theories than people who are left-wing. And it tests this idea, and what it finds very interestingly is no, people who are right, very, very right-wing are just as likely to believe in conspiracy theories. And if we define conspiracy theory as a belief that there is some sort of group of agents, some sort of group of conspiring agents behind certain consequences, behind certain events, when it is much more likely, based on the available evidence, that it is simply something organic that has happened. If we define conspiracy in that way, so it's the unnecessary imputation of a conspiracy, they are just as likely on the right to believe in conspiracy theories as they are on the left. And in fact, it is my argument, and I argue this in my new book, Spiteful Mutants, that the right and the left are both, in a sense, equally Gnostic when it comes to the extremes. So let's have a look then at what we mean by Gnosticism. Well, it's the thing is, and this is perhaps an argument against Keith Woods, it is inherently difficult to define. So it's not as though there is any clear agreed on definition of Gnosticism. So what this means is that you can, based on one kind of definition of Gnosticism, you can start to argue that the modern day political extreme left is Gnostic in character, but then based on other definitions, it's more difficult. So this is the nature of any metaphor. No metaphor is perfect. What a metaphor tries to do is take something novel, which doesn't make sense in terms of our previous categories, and force it to make sense in terms of our previous categories. And so by saying this is like this, this operates like this, then the person has an awakening moment, and on some level, one might even say on a Gnostic level, one therefore feels a sense of understanding. One comprehends it within one's system of categories and one's worldview in a way that one hasn't previously been able to do. Now, of course, no metaphor is perfect. There will always be ways when you really dissect the metaphor, when you really start saying, "Oh, well, it's like it in this way, but not in this way," that it could be a superficial metaphor that offers therefore some insight into it, or it could be a really deep metaphor that where it works on many levels. But there will always be levels where it doesn't work. So, in a sense, I think it is unreasonable to sort of dismiss that the metaphor that the modern left or the modern right is a bit like the Gnostics, because it's never going to be exactly like it. That is simply the nature of metaphor. It will never be exactly the same as it, because it's not exactly the same. So there will always be levels on which it is misleading. Secondly, following Karl Marx, one might argue that history repeats itself as farce, and therefore, to the extent that this is history repeating itself, and this is Gnosticism coming along again, it's always going to be a little bit different. So in that sense, the whole criticism of the metaphor of Gnosticism is a kind of extreme it's asking for too high a standards. The metaphor does not have high objective sort of scientific standards like that. It makes sense of something. That is all it is supposed to do, but it's never going to completely make sense of something. But the essence of Gnosticism, I guess you could argue, is one, the fundamental belief that the world is bad. That there are two, all these Gnostic groups seem to have that kind of belief, that the world, this world is the world of the devil, it's the world of the demiurge, it's the world of evil. And that in some way there's another god, there's a good god that somehow has been sort of trapped and thrown out of the world, and that Jesus is a manifestation of this good god. And we should follow this good God and therefore reject the things of the world. Secondly, there is kind of, in a sense, a belief that the world is fake. The world isn't what it seems. Behind the world is the operation of this evil God. Behind everything that we perceive, this evil God is behind things. It is an expression of this evil God. And in that sense, the world is not what it seems, and that the world is fake. Thirdly, related to this, yes, there is the belief that there are these evil forces behind the scenes that are controlling everything. Fourthly, there is a belief in sort of esoteric knowledge, in gnosis, in a belief that certain people have, an understanding that certain people have, and this makes them superior in some way, and this makes them, comprehend the true nature of things in a way that ordinary people don't. And then there is an idea that we are, in a sense, a piece of God. We are a piece of the good God thrust into this world of darkness. Now, how is modern-day leftism, or for that matter, rightism, like that? Well, first of all, they both believe that the world is in some level a bad place. The left believe it is a bad place because it is unfair, because it is dominated by racism and colonialism and all of these evil, unfair things that go against equality. And so in that sense, the world is fundamentally a bad place. And this is consistent with the evidence that we have, which I can look at in my book, Spiteful Mutants, that left-wing people perceive the world as a bad place. They perceive, they are unhappy. They feel negative feelings strongly. They feel a sense of unfairness. They feel that there is something wrong with the nature of life. Now, in the same way, the those on the far right, they have when you talk about things like QAnon or whatever, they have a belief that the world is in a sense a bad place. It's not exactly the same. It's not, but it's been taken over. Perhaps it's a good place, but it's been taken over by bad people. And it's not fundamentally unfair or wrong, but it's been taken over by bad people. And those bad people have made the world a bad place. So it's slightly different. From the left-wing perspective, it's as though we're always fighting against injustice. The world is kind of fundamentally bad. But with the right, it's kind of, it was good. In a sense, there was an Eden, but it's been taken over by bad people. Although perhaps that's the left-wing view as well. The second idea is that the world is fake. The world is superficial. Now, you have this idea very, very, very strongly because you have this idea that behind events, behind what we see, there is actually something deeper. There is unpleasant, evil people controlling events from behind the scenes. And so the world is actually fake. There are all these things going on behind the scenes which are causing the world to be bad, whether from a left-wing perspective it's systemic racism or whatever it happens to be, from a right-wing perspective it could be QAnon or other conspiracies. Then you have, strongly related to this, a belief in evil forces behind the scenes, a conspiracy theory, theories which I would argue are unnecessary, that the world makes sense without those conspiracies. What's going on makes sense without them, so they are unnecessarily posited. It's not to say that they're not happening, but the world makes sense without them. So to rely on them and say that everything is to do with them is wrong. From a left-wing perspective, this is systemic racism. It's been demonstrated in a report in the UK, for example, that the police are not institutionally racist. So this is a conspiracy theory. It is empirically incorrect and it is posited unnecessarily. So systemic racism, that sort of thing, or plutocrats controlling things. And on the far right, then you have beliefs in the Jews are responsible for everything, or QAnon, or whatever. So evil forces behind the scenes. Then you have a belief in esoteric knowledge. Now, this isn't so clear-cut, but both of them have a belief that if you read books that are published by the far left, they have these like by Robin DiAngelo or whatever. It's as though she has some understanding that is non-cognitive, that it's sort of intuitive, that she understands the true nature of racism. That normal white people, they think they understand racism, but they don't, and they have to kind of contemplate harder and think harder so they can truly have an enlightenment, a true understanding of the nature of racism. And there are only certain special people that really think about it that can have that understanding and understand that, oh, actually they are racist. Understand that actually they think they're not anti-racist, but they are racist. And only when they have that enlightenment, that epiphany, will they not be racist anymore. And there's only certain prophets like Robin DiAngelo that aren't really racist. So there's that. And then on the other hand, there's this gnosis that you have on the extreme right as well, that there's this QAnon or whatever, that there's some esoteric, unusual world view that suddenly makes sense of everything. And the thing is that everyone has access to this. Everyone, in theory, everyone has the ability to gain this gnosis. But of course, do they? I'm not so sure. I mean, perhaps they don't. It's a dodgy area. And then finally, you have this idea that we are the good people. We that have this gnosis, we are kind of pieces of divine light in an evil world. Now, I think you have this very clearly on the far left. You have this idea that we are gods. We define ourselves. Who is it that defines himself? It is God. God says, I am what I am. We define who we are. If we say we are women, if I say I'm a woman, I am a woman. I define myself. And so if I say that I'm black, then I am black. I define myself. There's no objective world. There is no objective reality. And in that sense, it's transcendent. You transcend the objective reality. There is no objective reality. You transcend this so-called reality. If you like, this conspiracy that is propounded by those that are in power. That's what you get with postmodernism, that there's no such thing as objective truth. And so the idea that there is objective truth, all that really is a conspiracy by powerful people to keep themselves in power and to keep those who are marginalised and disempowered. And only when you realise that that's what that is, that the whole notion of objective truth is a conspiracy, there is no truth, there's just a void. And in that void, in that darkness, we are pieces of divine light. We are floating pieces of consciousness that define ourselves and are under attack from devil-like other pieces of consciousness that want to tell us that there's such a thing as objective truth and that we can't transcend and define ourselves. And we must fight those devil-like pieces of evil consciousness that try and impose their rules upon us. We are the true divine light gods and they are Satan. And that seems to me to be, so it is transcendent in that sense. So and on the right, it's not so clear cut, but there is this idea that we are the good people. We've ended up in some evil world. Most people are either normies or, you know, the blue pill, or bad or idiots. And we are the good people in this. We are the pieces of the good God. Now, that metaphor is stretching it, but something like that. Now, how does the metaphor Gnosticism not work? Well, it doesn't work because, first of all, there is no single movement that was Gnostic. There were some movements that defined themselves as Gnostic. So very strictly speaking, we should probably only say that those groups are Gnostic. But there is no clear definition of Gnostic. There is no clear borderline. And so it becomes a problem as a metaphor because it was basically a kind of term of abuse by the opponents of Gnostic groups. And things that they didn't like would be chucked in with Gnosticism. Secondly, a lot of Gnostic groups, not all Gnostic groups, believed in a sort of special class of humans that were able to attain transcendence. Now, do we have that? In theory, it seems with both the left and the right, anybody is able to attain the Gnostic superior knowledge if they try hard enough. But on the other hand, is that true?
Is that really true? Could it be argued that in reality there are certain groups that are more able to obtain that knowledge than other groups, either because they are purer and live a purer lifestyle or something, or because they are themselves marginalised? So I think that's a moot point. And the most important, though, is that there is a spiritual realm. There is a clear spiritual realm in Gnosticism. There is no spiritual realm whatsoever in either the alt-right or in the extreme left. There's no spiritual realm. This is a worldview of now, of the here and now on Earth. There is no spiritual realm. It could be argued that following Edward Bailey's notion of implicit religion, there is kind of an implicit spiritual realm. If you push it hard enough, then what they're actually saying is that we, the left, let's say, is that we are these lumps of light in a world of darkness, which implies a spiritual realm, metaphorically. But there is no overt spiritual realm. Now, on that basis, what you could argue is what we're actually seeing, because remember that the evolutionary circumstances of the early church are very different from our circumstances. We had this strong selection. Okay, it had weakened by the time of the early church, but it got warmer and so on. But we had this strong selection for religiousness. Religiousness, we know, is between sort of 0.4 and 0.6 heritable. It's associated with fertility. It's associated with mental health. It's associated with physical health. It's associated with genetic health. It has every marker of being a sort of a mutation, or a group of them, which was under selection. But on the other hand, it is composed of a sort of bundle of things. It is for over-detection of agency, for example, or over-detection of causation, or a bundle of adaptive traits that came together because they were all adaptive under harsh conditions, and then you get this thing religion, and religion starts being selected for in itself as an adaptation. Now, what you would expect as Darwinian selection pressures weaken is that those traits would come apart. You would get they would no longer be selected for as a bundle. They would deviate. They would come apart, and therefore you would get religions which reflect aspects of these traits, but not all of them. For example, they might have a very, very strong belief in dogma, and which is an aspect of religiosity, that you have certain beliefs that hold you together, but no actual belief in God or conception of religious experience. Those things would become separate. And I think that's why the Gnosticism metaphor doesn't quite work, because what's happened is that the religious bundle, the sacred bundle, if you like, has come apart. And what we are seeing, there are still some people that have this sacred bundle, and having that, by the way, correlates still with fertility and mental health and physical health and so on. And you have these people that it doesn't necessarily correlate with, in fact, it probably is negatively correlated with mental health. Certainly on the far left, we know that is correlated with mental poor health. And on the alt-right, we know that is correlated with sort of psychopathic personality and things like that. And so actually, therefore, you would expect those people to follow some sort of religiosity, which is a breakaway from what was being selected for under harsh Darwinian conditions. It would be a religiosity that you had under weaker conditions. And so if you look at the religiosity of groups that are living in environments that are easy yet unstable ecologies, the Yanomami or whatever, there's no belief in moral gods. There's no collective worship of moral gods. There's nothing like that. There's belief in totems. There's belief in sort of spirits or whatever that are behind events. There's kind of fairy tale beliefs, folklore beliefs, that there's things behind everything. So what, witches or whatever. Like, there's evil people, evil spirits that are behind bad things that happen. So you have this. That's the over detection of agency. Or you have to do certain words which shouldn't be said because they're so holy or so dangerous, or all these sorts of elements of religion, but without the religion itself. And Gnosticism, I think, more strongly reflected the traditional religion itself, although it was perhaps a maladaptive expression of it, because it was associated with, in many cases, with not wanting children, with runaway religion signalling, such that eventually you signal that you don't want children. And in some extreme cases, of course, these Gnostics would basically sterilise themselves, would castrate themselves, or would have a theology that said that you shouldn't have children. Now, the alt-right certainly doesn't have that, but there is a degree to which the far left does have that. It does have, with runaway environmentalism and whatever, this idea that the world's an evil place and you shouldn't have children. It's a bad thing to have children. And perhaps, you know, as white people, you should feel so guilty that you shouldn't have children as a sort of penance for your inherent evil. So I think that you, in that sense, the metaphor kind of breaks down, and what you can talk about is something that's never going to be exactly like Gnosticism. It's going to have elements of it, and it makes sense as having elements of it. And you had this in late stage religion under weakened Darwinian selection pressures around the time of the fall of Rome. It got warmer and so forth, and you have the collapse of civilization, and we have the same thing now. But it's just that civilization has got so high that then its collapse involves dysgenics, that is so extreme, involves so many maladaptive people that deviate from the Darwinian norm, that the religion bundle itself has broken up. And so therefore you get things that are not exactly like Gnosticism, but are a bit like Gnosticism on both the far right and the far left. And as for this paper, as I say, what it showed is that there is no political dimension to conspiracy theories. People on the far left, they believe in conspiracy theories as strongly as people on the far right. So those people, on the far left, people are high in neuroticism. This makes you paranoid and whatever, and therefore prone to believing in conspiracy theories. And people on the far right, the evidence indicates, are high in psychopathology. This means you don't trust people. This makes you paranoid. This makes you prone to believing in conspiracy theories. Also, people on the far right are lower average IQ, and this makes you prone to believing in the least logical worldview. It makes you instinctive. One of our instincts is to overdetect the agency and believe in conspiracy theories, and so on. An element of it might also be high openness. This is particularly clear on the far left, and this would make you open to new ideas or whatever. Now, there can be all kinds of balances as to why individuals are prone to conspiracy theories, but those are the sort of basic ideas. So if you look at these conspiracy theories, and they look at these in the paper, those that are on the far right are more likely to believe in conspiracies surrounding COVID, global warming, and the birther movement. And those that are on the far left are more likely to believe in the idea that conspiracies surrounding Donald Trump, the idea that Donald Trump is evil, that he's a Russian stooge, that he stole the election in 2016, and all of this sort of stuff, maybe based on Russia. So it's basically anti-Russian conspiracy theories. And then those in the middle, so this is conspiracies which those that are that believe in conspiracies that are on the far left and the far right, they coalesce on, is that the moon landing was fake, that Pearl Harbor was some sort of inside job, that sort of thing. So they cross over there. They actually have these points of commonality, which is at least quite interesting, particularly with regard to the moon landing being fake. What they don't look at, interestingly, in this paper, maybe they daren't look at it, they don't look at systemic racism as a conspiracy theory. They don't look at institutional racism as a conspiracy theory. They don't look at that. That wasn't an option that was given to the many thousands of people who were surveyed, which is interesting because perhaps it should have been, and the results would have been illustrative. But there you go. They didn't. Maybe they didn't dare do so. But the key point, remember, is that Gnosticism works to some extent as a means of understanding both what is happening on the extreme left and the extreme right. Well, I hope this has been of interest. If it has, please subscribe. It really helps if you do that. Remember, I live stream Mondays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, and I will see you soon. And goodbye!